Welcome to Manufacturing Talk Radio, the only show that takes a look at the obstacles and opportunities open to small to mid-sized enterprises that manufacture here in America. Brought to you by All Metals and Forge Group, with your hosts, Tim Grady and Lou Wise.
Welcome, everyone, to Manufacturing Talk Radio. We're glad to have you back on this lovely Tuesday afternoon as we broadcast from both Atlanta, New Jersey, and we have four guests on from Connecticut today. So we're very excited to talk about aerospace. But before we jump into the show, Lou, how are you today?
I'm doing good. I don't know about how lovely it is. We did have snow flurries down here in New Jersey. And I think Connecticut had some more than just snow flurries. So the winter may be over in some parts of the country, but you're in a more fortunate position than we are.
At the moment. We have four guests on our show today, and we're really talking about the aerospace industry in Connecticut and what really is happening in aerospace. It's a booming industry at the moment, and we really want to share with all of our listeners what's happening in the industry and what the opportunities are. Today we take a look at Connecticut with the Connecticut Department of Economic and Community Development. Commissioner Catherine Smith is with us as a very special guest this morning. Catherine, how are you?
I'm doing great, and thank you so much for having me on today. I appreciate it.
Well, we certainly appreciate having you on the show. And I know that you have a Manufacturing Innovation Fund, a new initiative that you wanted to share with our listeners. What's it all about, Catherine?
Well, you know, it's you're absolutely right when you said in the intro here that Connecticut is seeing a real growth in demand for aerospace products, and we are blessed to have in the state a number of companies that focus in aerospace. In fact, we have what I consider to be a world-class cluster of businesses that support big OEM-type companies such as Pratt & Whitney and Boeing and, you know, Rolls-Royce and a whole slew of other manufacturers. And so recognizing that these companies, the smaller supply chain companies here in the state, were going to have to ramp up extremely quickly to meet the ongoing demand of their upstream supply companies, we decided to start something called the Manufacturing Innovation Fund. And it's really geared at that small to mid-sized company that wants to make investments either in equipment or talent or perhaps even ISO regulations and training to make sure that they're really ready for this onslaught of good news, which is, you know, really having to ramp up quickly. So the fund is available. It's got $30 million in it, and the first program we rolled out was called a voucher program. It started in January, and companies can apply for up to $50,000 in match to support some kind of project inside the company that, as I suggested earlier, really helps them get a leg up, make that investment to be ready to take on more demand. And we're about to launch the incumbent worker training program, which will start in the latter part of April. So lots of good news for those small to mid-sized companies and really demonstrating the state's commitment to this sector of the economy.
And I know we have some familiarity with the world's aerospace alley up there. Lou, you have been up and down whatever that road is. I've forgotten what you said it was.
Route 15.
Route 15
and 91. It was like a bus route.
We have Al Samuel, who's the executive director of Aerospace Components Manufacturer, on with us as well. Al, how are you today?
I'm very fine, and thank you very much for inviting me to join this program.
Pleased to have you on. Now, what is ACM? You know, what does it do, and who are its members?
Well, ACM is an organization that is dedicated to the supply chain. We are a niche of the vertical aerospace industry, and our members are all suppliers. Probably over 90% of our members today are in the turbine engine business, but we're certainly open to any aerospace manufacturer in Connecticut, and with a caveat, with southwestern Massachusetts. Because when you look at the map and you see the the density of aerospace manufacturers, and I should say most of these are small to mid-sized firms, and you look along that corridor that we just talked about, the I-15, I-91 corridor, we've coined the term Aerospace Alley. And it's an area that, if you go back into history, back in the 20s, it's where Bill Boeing and Frank Rentschler of Pratt & Whitney got together and formed the original major aerospace company that spun off United Technologies and a small company called Boeing and even a small airline called United Airlines. So, you know, this is the area where manufacturing for the aerospace industry began. So today we represent that supply chain. We have over 95 firms. Our organization is growing, and we provide support and training to better these businesses in terms of lean manufacturing, in terms of incumbent worker training, and we also have a business development organization where members support each other in terms of understanding what's going on in the industry.
Catherine, I assume you and Al are working together to get your initiative exposed to his member base.
Yeah, absolutely. And Al's been a terrific partner. And frankly, as I said earlier, I think this particular ACM association is really world class in terms of how it can create an ecosystem really for companies in this industry to benefit from the places where they can definitely work together. Like as Al said, training is a really critical part of upgrading your talent and making sure you have a pipeline of future workforce available to you, and the ACM is second to none in terms of working as a team to work with our community colleges and our higher education system to make sure that's happening. So we really appreciate all that Al and his entire operation does to support the industry here in the state.
I remember when I used to run the Aerospace Alley, which I never heard until today, so thank you for updating me. There are about 600 or 700 subcontract manufacturers supporting the major OEMs during the years of the 80s, and you have 95 members. Do you have a fairly representative group from the entire base, or do they still have the 600, 700 manufacturers, and you still have a growth path to go?
Well, I think that that larger number still exists in this local area. You know, as I said a moment ago, our members tend to focus more on the turbine engine business. And, you know, to that end, many of them are machine shops. Many of them are suppliers of special process services and special equipment to these shops. And, you know, together we form that let's say that niche of the overall supply chain that exists within the state of Connecticut.
But, you know, stepping back, there's about 4,500 companies in the state that provide a diverse array of manufacturing types within Connecticut. And it's really quite impressive. You know, we think people, when they think of Connecticut, don't necessarily think of manufacturing. But, in fact, the state manufacturing output is about $24 billion a year. And it also represents about 90% of all of the exports that the state does. So it's very healthy, a part of the economy here in Connecticut.
And I'd like to introduce one of those manufacturers in Farmington, Connecticut, and that is Max McIntyre, Vice President of Turbine Technologies, who's on the show with us. Max, how are you today?
Good morning. I'm doing
Max,
very well.
Good. How is, you know, one of the things that's come up on our show frequently, and that is the millennials and the transition from the folks who are in the gray hair group, like myself, being replaced by the millennials who are just coming into the workforce. How is workforce development going for you folks at Turbine Technologies?
Very well, to be honest with you. We have, you know, put our tentacles out. We number one, look for talent. We're a special process house, specializing in all forms of EDM and milling. And we have looked high and low for the exact kind of people with the right characteristics and background that we're looking for. And lately we've been really relying on the state's community college programs that offer manufacturing as one of their programs. We've hired several people from Manchester, from as Nuntuck, and we're still looking at others. So these people that we're hiring, they seem to transition well, especially when they're going from nothing straight into CNC manufacturing.
So we've been talking about blessed. Milling and EDM. Could you explain that to our audience who may not be familiar with it?
Sure. EDM is electro-discharge machining. It's kind of scary when you talk about it. We call it sparky thing in metal. And it's for drilling precision holes in exotic metals that other forms of manufacturing, conventional forms of machining, just will not give you the hole or the shape in the location that you would like it to be. So we specialize in small cooling holes that go into things such as turbine blades and vanes that are going to a turbine engine that fly all over the world. So it's very important what we do. You can't have a blade melting at altitude, so the cooling hole is very important. And we also do milling, especially if it's a value added to our already value-adding process. Say we will take a large ring and we'll segment it with a wire EDM machine, mill the ends off, and then put seal slots in there so it can be put back together inside a turbine engine.
You know, I'm fascinated by these turbine engines, and I was fascinated to learn from our next guest, who's Paul Ruxlow of Habco, that they actually make the testing equipment to test these. I believe, Paul, you described them as microscopic holes in the turbine blades to keep them cool so they don't melt at altitude. Is that right, Paul?
Yeah, it is right. Thanks for having me. I have to qualify my comments, though, because I'm the chief financial officer, and I really know just a little enough to get dangerous. But debits and credits I'm fine with, but air holes in jet engines, I'm not as trained as a lot of our guys are. Yes,
I can help them out.
Yeah, thank you.
We have one of your benches. So. We do have one of your benches.
Yeah, we make benches that test the airflow that flows through the different airs that flow through the parts inside the engine. And the jet engine runs so fast and so hot that if it didn't flow the air through the engine, it would melt itself. That's what our engineers tell me anyway.
That is true. And the airflow, like I said, the airflow benches that we have inside of these turbine blades, they're not a fully hollow cavity. There's intricate detailed channels at every little hole that we put in. The air has to come out in a certain channel. And then his testing equipment over at Habco that they manufacture, state-of-the-art equipment. We have one of the benches ourselves, and we're also looking at purchasing a new one sometime in the near future.
Not to show my age, but when I was traveling up and down in the 80s, I was dealing with companies like New England Aircraft and Mal Tool and Windsor Tool. In those days, I don't remember that they were drilling holes in those blades and vanes. Is this a newer technology?
I don't think it's a newer technology.
No.
I don't
think it's newer either.
Maybe it was the 70s.
Be careful.
You do have the blades up front. The blades in the compressor section are solid. They're not hollow as the blades in the turbine section.
I see.
You're not talking about the prop jobs, are you, Lou? You don't go back that far.
No, not exactly. Close. But they did have two sets of wings.
Yeah.
Catherine, both Turbine Technologies and Habco, are these the kind of companies that your program is targeted to helping for their growth?
Yeah, you know, they absolutely are, and I think you can see just by the conversation here that one of the really great things about this little ecosystem of aerospace companies here in the state is that they do support each other. They buy each other's products. They can back each other up for big orders and things like that. But yes, what our program is designed to do, this new Manufacturing Innovation Fund, which, by the way, is added on to a number of other sources of capital for larger expansions that companies might consider. We have a great tool in the tool chest called the Manufacturing Assistance Act, which allows us to provide loans, forgivable loans, and small grants to manufacturers and other companies in the state. And that's been really helpful to us in the past. But right now, especially as we mentioned earlier, with this spurt of demand coming to this industry, we've found that some of the smaller companies have some smaller needs. Maybe it's one piece, one new CNC tool. Maybe it's really, like I said earlier, testing to make sure that their protocols are in place for all of the demands from DOD. Maybe it's, you know, doing patent work and talking to a patent lawyer about some of the new inventions they might be creating in composites or in additive manufacturing. So all of these types of investments by the companies such as Turbine and HABCO can certainly be accommodated under our new Manufacturing Innovation Fund.
Now, Catherine, if a small manufacturer, mid-sized manufacturer, wants to learn more about the fund on the web, where can they go?
So if you go to the website for my organization, it's called decd.org. So that's just the simple letters, decd.org. If you go there, you'll find an icon that you just click on that will take you directly to the Manufacturing Fund. It's called the Connecticut Manufacturing Innovation Fund. And at that site has the applications and a pretty simple process to apply for these kinds of opportunities. And I would say that, you know, one of the things we're very keen on is helping manufacturers who might be interested in coming to the state to set up their manufacturing facilities due to the proximity to some of the great companies like Sikorsky, Pratt & Whitney, and a number of these other, you know, mid-size and sometimes larger companies like Command being here in the state. They can also just come to our website and find a lot of tools that could help them with that kind of transition as well. We aim to not only help companies find access to capital and locations and that kind of thing, but we're also very keen on making sure they get access to the kinds of folks in the community here, people like Al Samuels and the education centers that can really help a company get its legs underneath it in a new site.
So
DECD.org.
Let me ask a question. It seems as though that the aerospace industry is fragmented into about four sectors in the U.S. New England, obviously with Connecticut being a center post, Los Angeles, the Southwest and Texas, and some in the Midwest, General Electric, and so on. But down in the Carolinas and Alabama and so on, there seems to be a significant migration coming from California to the Southwest for all kinds of reasons, good weather, no unions, and so on and so forth. With all of that happening, do you see a benefit coming to Connecticut as a result of this migration that's occurring?
You know, I'd ask Al to comment as well, but I think one of the things that we have here as a real benefit in Connecticut is that we have an extremely talented workforce. In fact, Connecticut ranks up in the top three states for productivity per employee. And so, you know, I think one of the things that the companies that do work here like is that it is an amazingly productive place, a place where this kind of very precise advanced manufacturing can find very good talent and people to make it work quite well. So while, yes, I would agree there's been, you know, as in almost every industry, a rush towards trying to find the lowest cost production areas, I think in Connecticut, the low cost, sometimes you get what you pay for, example means that sometimes in Connecticut we're finding companies that want to, you know, produce not tens of thousands of a single item a day, but rather, you know, four or five pieces that are truly, you know, Six Sigma-like quality. So I think that's been very, very helpful to the state, and not to mention the fact, as I did before, that, you know, a number of the large OEMs are located up here in the Northeast. But Al, would you add something to that?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think that the opening up of the Southeast area to aerospace makes a huge difference to our businesses. Our businesses have been around for some of them 60 and 70 years, and we are used to dealing with the world. And, you know, the economics of the aerospace industry has changed radically over the last 30 or 40 years. So rather than doing business with the local OEM, as was the case. We've now learned how to do business, you know, across the globe, and that's really driven by the fact that OEMs, a Pratt or a Boeing or a Sikorsky, when they begin a new program, can no longer afford to develop it on their own, so they seek risk and revenue sharing partners. Those partners are typically overseas. So our members that used to deliver basically in the backyard of Connecticut now have learned to deal with global sources. First and second tier customers are all around the world. So the fact that there's new business or new openings in the Southeast is really not a huge issue, in my opinion. On the other hand, you know, Connecticut is really a highly cost-effective state because our members have learned how to become competitors around the world. So even though someone may say that, okay, the Southeast is a non-union area and maybe labor rates are lower, you know, when you buy and you ask for a quote from one of our manufacturers, they don't talk about what their labor rates might be. They talk about the price of the part. And the price of the part is as competitive as anywhere in the world, and that's because we've learned how to do it smarter, better, more efficiently, with just a wonderfully experienced workforce. So we are as competitive as the Southeast, and to that end, bring on the competition, you know.
Okay. One other aspect with Manufacturing Talk Radio, we had several shows about 3D printing or advanced manufacturing, as it's also known. And we realize that Boeing and others are doing a lot of 3D printing. I think Boeing has 20,000 parts in one of the more recent airplanes. How is 3D printing affecting Connecticut? Is it there? Is it becoming part of that new manufacturing strain? It's open for anybody.
So let me start this, and I think there's actually a number of areas where Connecticut's moving forward on this front. First of all, we haven't mentioned it before, but the University of Connecticut has a phenomenal engineering school, and we've, as a state, made the decision to invest even more in that school in the coming years so that the school will grow by about 70% in terms of both the number of students it graduates, faculty members, et cetera. And one of the areas of expertise there is truly in additive manufacturing, and they have partnerships with Pratt & Whitney and GE and others on developing new techniques to do that work. So on the research side and the innovation side, there's quite a bit of work being done at UConn in conjunction with another of our great institutions. It's called the Connecticut Center for Advanced Technology, or CCAT. And that organization also has tools where smaller manufacturers can come in and test additive manufacturing for parts that they're considering making so that they can keep up with this trend and really have an opportunity to kind of kick the tires a bit, try things out at CCAT before they make the larger investments that might be required in their own plant. So all of this is coming together. Just one company I might point to here in the state, it's called Oxford Performance Metals, or OPM. They started as a very small company here, like a dozen employees. They were making additive manufacturing-wise parts that could be used in skull replacements and bone replacements across the medical, the biomedical industry. They are now looking at growing into the aerospace community in, again, on their proprietary additive manufacturing capabilities. And so I think you're going to see them grow rather substantially in that area in the coming years. So, yes, there's a lot going on in this space here in the state.
Tell me a little bit about the Aviation Summit 2015 that's coming up. Anybody?
The Aviation Summit, I believe, is going to be down in Groton again.
Right.
Down near Mystic. We had an event last year. It was very, very informative, where we talked about aerospace across the globe and trends in the industry.
Do you, I've heard all kinds of numbers about the production of aircraft over the next 20 years, mostly commercial aircraft from all countries, primarily U.S. and China and Europe. I've heard numbers like 40,000 aircraft to be built in 20 years. Can you have any comments on that?
Yes, we have right now there's approximately 20,000 engines still on back order from various sizes, various aircraft for commercial aircraft all over the world, and that's one thing that's exciting the whole industry. From all OEMs providing engines for those aircraft, and the importance of that is to the state of Connecticut. The other thing about Connecticut is, and I always plug this, is it's best value. You know, when you're making a product, it's not just price. It's price, delivery, quality. It's the relationships that companies around the country and around the globe now have with these businesses inside of Connecticut. And that's one of the big attractions that we have here in Connecticut. A lot of customers need things done right, they come to companies in Connecticut for that.
Paul, I know that when we spoke earlier, HABCO is looking forward to some growth in the near term. Can you share with our listeners what HABCO growth looks like over the next couple of years?
Sure, be happy to. First of all, I have to say right off the bat that I'm probably our company is the beneficiary of everyone on this call. We're excited because we've recently been awarded a financial assistance package from DECD that'll help us grow. As you mentioned, Turbine Technologies is one of our customers, and we're a member of ACM, and we hire engineers from UConn. And so, as everyone's been speaking about Connecticut and our industry, everything that they've said is completely accurate. I mean, you're right, Connecticut's not the cheapest place in the world, but a lot of our very skilled, highly paid employees, they don't want to live in the cheapest places in the world, and neither do I, frankly. And Connecticut's a beautiful place, and we have very smart people that are very well-trained working with us. And at HABCO, we're a 45-year-old startup. We were started 45 years ago by a Pratt Whitney engineer, and we recently took on a new group of investors a little over 2 years ago, and our owners want us to grow, and they're all Connecticut residents, and they all want us to stay in Connecticut and have us grow. And so we've got three major customers that we support. One is called Pratt & Whitney, one is called Sikorsky, and the third is called Department of Defense. And the thing that they have in common is they all want a good price, but the bottom line is quality. When it comes to aerospace, you have to have top quality. And I think that that's what Connecticut is all about. It's all about growing our jobs here. Our DECD financial assistance package is motivating us to grow our jobs. When our new group of investors joined the company, we had 30 employees. We now have 50, and we're aiming for 80 in about two more years. And we're that smaller supply chain company that Catherine mentioned earlier. We're right down the road from Pratt & Whitney in Glastonbury, and it's all about quality, and with quality, you know, you have to have top talent. And so we love where we are, and we love the space that we're in, and ACM does a great job helping us to develop our talent, and we've hosted many ACM meetings here, and it's an industry where, you know, you're always dealing with smart people, and I think that that's the bottom line.
That certainly is. And we're going to, while we have a moment here, take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back. I want to pose to you, Max, the same question about growth opportunities in Connecticut aerospace that's happening for Turbine Technologies. But, Lou, you have something before we go to break?
Yeah, I'd like to thank Catherine for joining us. I know she has a prior commitment, and she's going to have to bail on us. Unless you'd like to stay with us, Catherine, we're more than happy to have you stay.
Well, I wish I could, and thank you so much again for including me. And as you can see, we have just a lot going on in the state around aerospace, and we're really proud of it, and we're thrilled about the investments that we're making to make Connecticut even better for aerospace. So, again, thank you so much for including me today, and good luck to all those folks out there on the phone who are joining us today. Appreciate your support as well.
Thank you for joining
us. Thank you,
Catherine. At the end of the show, when we're off time at some point, I'd like to have a further conversation with you about the aerospace in Connecticut. So thank you for that.
No problem. Happy to do it.
And I think we're going to take a break now. And
Manufacturing Talk Radio will be right back.
American Crane and Equipment Corporation in Douglasville, Pennsylvania is a leader in specialized cranes, hoists, and material handling equipment for industries including aerospace, nuclear, oil and gas, transit, construction, and waste handling. Call 877-877-6778 or visit AmericanCrane.com. That's AmericanCrane.com or 877-877-6778.
How do you keep your business humming? Where do you go when you're looking for quality suppliers of new equipment? Components, MRO supplies, repair services, or even raw materials. 30 years ago, you would have turned to the Thomas Register. Today, those big green books are better than ever at thomasnet.com, industry's leading platform for product sourcing and supplier discovery. You can easily find that local machine shop, national distributor, OEM, or any supplier having the right quality certification. Fast and free. You can even get to specific products, components, or downloadable 3D CAD drawings simply by entering specifications or part numbers. There's a reason ThomasNet.com has become the go-to supplier discovery tool for procurement professionals and engineers. There's simply no other resource like it, and it's all free. Go to ThomasNet.com today and see how top-notch supplier discovery doesn't have to put a dent into your bottom line.
All Metals and Forge Group is an ISO 9001 AS and EN 9100 manufacturer of open-die forgings and seamless rolled rings in alloy, carbon, stainless and tool steels, aluminum, copper, titanium, and nickel alloys. Visit us at steelforge.com or call 800-600-9290.
Welcome back to Manufacturing Talk Radio.
I'd like to welcome back everyone to Manufacturing Talk Radio. In the first half hour, we had Commissioner Catherine Smith of the Connecticut Department of Economic and Community Development. We're joined again with Al Samuel, who's the Executive Director of Aerospace Component Manufacturers, Paul Richlow, who's CFO of HABCO in Glastonbury, Connecticut, and Max McIntyre, Vice President of Turbine Technologies in Farmington, Connecticut. Max, just before the break, I was talking with Paul about the kind of growth that HABCO is experiencing. What kind of growth does Turbine Technologies plan to experience or is expecting to experience given the growth of the aerospace industry overall and in Connecticut?
Well, we're looking at growing approximately 25% over the next few years. So far, you know, our customers are we're kind of unique as a special process house. Our customers are the OEMs themselves, but also their first-tier suppliers. Many of our customers are in the ACM as well, outside of the OEMs. So we have customers like Pratt & Whitney, GE Aviation, Rolls-Royce, Alstom Power, Pratt & Whitney Power, besides the aviation wing, we also have industrial gas turbines customers. But we've been investing heavily over the last year in cutting-edge machinery, all new machineries that are CNC, from high-speed hole to CNC EDM machines, and vision systems. We purchased recently a couple of vision systems in order to keep up with demand of inspection for blades and vanes so we can go from older technology to newer technology. So we're investing heavily in new equipment and modernizing that. We're also investing heavily in training of our employees. We're currently on an ACE supplier gold trajectory, trying to become qualified for UTC, and doing a lot of training in-house and movement around. So we're very optimistic on what's going on in this industry and look forward to it. So we're looking to grow quite significantly over the next few years.
And Max, when you talk about the training programs and the achievements that you're trying to realize, are those industry requirements or new industry requirements that are coming down the pike?
The requirements, not so much industry requirements for us to be trained in them. Well, they are if we're talking about just cross-training people in the ins and outs of AS9100 Rev-C or NADCAP requirements that we have to live by. But we're sending our people to CNC schools where we also get involved in CCAT to learn some new techniques on machining. We go to all the other schools and courses that really help us understand our machines and our equipment more, from 3D CAD modeling courses to CNC courses for new employees as well as our veterans.
And I know, Al, you touched on it just a bit, the OEM supply chain relationship. In about a month from now, a little over a month from now, we're going to be out at the ISM 100th Anniversary Conference in Phoenix, Arizona. How has the OEM supply chain relationship changed in aerospace over the last two or three decades, Al?
Well, I think I began to touch on it earlier in our conversation, but if you go back to 20 or 30 years, many of our firms and similar firms across the company would do business with a local prime contractor. But what's happened over the time is that work has become globalized. And it's become globalized because of the need for the prime contractors, as I said earlier, to form risk and revenue sharing relationships, and many of those relationships are now overseas. Our companies have had to learn how to do business with these overseas companies globally. There's also been a preponderance of work that has moved to what you might call lower labor cost regions of the world, primarily Southeast Asia and Eastern Europe. And we've had to learn how to compete with those situations. And even though these might be lower cost in terms of labor cost regions, what we like to tell our customers is, if you come to this area, you've got to consider the total cost of procurement of a part. Even though a part may be slightly less on the piece part price, when you consider the cost of bringing a new supplier, especially an overseas supplier, up to snuff in terms of their quality capabilities, their engineering capabilities, the cost of travel, the cost of transportation, even the cost of putting a part on a shelf as a hedge against the assembling company, the OEM, not having the part on time to assemble the part, those are all real costs. Add that to the piece price, and our total cost of procurement is much lower.
And what about what are some of the other issues confronting small to mid-sized firms in the aerospace industry from the association's point of view, Al?
Well, clearly right now we face, it's not a double-edged problem, but there are two situations. One, obviously our workforce is getting older and we're all getting gray hair, and we look upon this surge of new production coming, these tremendous number of new engines that are being developed and put on new commercial aircraft, and the issue is, how do you replace the aging workforce while you're trying to expand your business because of the increasing surge? And, to that end, we've been working very closely with the manufacturers and with the local school systems. We provide opportunities. Once a year we do a major event where in one morning we have over 850 high school students come through our event, which is held at a local hotel, not as a job fair, but to learn about what the expectations of employers are, to learn about the type of careers that are available in the industry. And we've been doing that for approximately 10 years. We also work very closely with the community college system, and they support us in training. We actually have a model where we train at our members' facilities, and various members will share in the training. So, companies go to each other's facilities to take courses that are being taught by the community colleges, but to a curriculum that's designed for the aerospace system. And we've been doing that for 16 years and probably have close to 100,000 man-hours worth of training that we've done in this manner.
Al?
Yes.
I'm part of that graying hair community. Fortunately, I have the hair to turn gray, so I'm feeling fortunate in that regard. And we have done a number of shows regarding the graying and the re-education of to replace the graying community. We got involved, Manufacturing Talk Radio got involved with ManufacturingDay.com, which is a government-sponsored program. Are you familiar with that?
Not that particular program, no, sir.
This is actually the National Association of Manufacturers and the FMA, and President Obama named it an official government day event, and it's usually on the first Friday in October, where they had this past year, which was its third year, and we're a sponsor of that. They had 120,000 visitors visiting manufacturing companies in all 50 states. I think that's something that you should look into. If you'd like us to send you information, I could do that, or you can look at MFGday.com, and you can read all about it. It's quite an event. And like I said, they had something like 120,000 people involved in that one day throughout the United States. And it's all for the same reasons that you mentioned, to bring in students, teachers, universities, to see that manufacturing today is not greasy fingernails and steel filings on the floor. So I pass that on to you.
Well, thank you very much, and I'll look into that. And many of our manufacturers do that on their own. They've already built relationships with local schools, whether it's the regional school or the technical school system in the state of Connecticut, and the community colleges. We have intern programs. Many of our members actually financially support an intern program, where students will train for 2 years while they work part-time, and you know, the hope is that that particular student becomes a full-time employee once that program ends.
Well, it's a system that seems to be working, and it's something that we need to do due to the fact that the working community is reducing and the new people coming in are fewer. So that's something that we all have to be concerned about.
Well, that's absolutely the case, and you know, not to plug the political side of our current administration, but this administration, the commissioner and the governor, really get the issue of support for manufacturing and training, and this was raised to them 7 years ago, and what's happened now is that a particular curriculum, which we helped establish at the Asnantuck Community College, which is in Enfield, Connecticut, has now been cloned, and seven other schools in the Connecticut Community College system offer that same type of manufacturing training, and I believe another one or two schools are about to go online. So it's been the support of the state through that community college system that has really begun to make a difference. They get it.
Well, glad to hear that some parts of our government are working aggressively and productively.
They are.
Paul, I want to go to you for just a moment. You know, most of us who are not involved in the aerospace industry are familiar with, we get on the plane takes off, it flies, it lands, and as long as it does all of those things okay, we're all in good shape. But there's a whole other piece of the industry, and that's servicing the plane on the ground. And that's really what HABCO is involved with. Can you share with us some of the things that you do to support aircraft on the ground?
Sure. You know, we take it for granted that you get on the plane and you arrive safely, but I can assure you it doesn't happen by accident or by luck. It's an incredibly intricate series of processes that that help us maintain the aircraft. And again, I'm far from an expert, but some of our products have been designed at the request of our customers, where they, as an example, we have a water validation product where you put a very highly sensitive sensor down the transmission of a helicopter, and it will detect any kind of water inside the transmission fluid of the transmission. And water inside the transmission of an engine is not a good thing, and we've lost some helicopters to having water in the engine. And if they detect, it's just a tool that helps the mechanics detect water inside the transmission. And if they do detect water, they take the aircraft out of service and they investigate what's been going on. That's one of our products. Another product is we call it a DAP, a differential angle protractor, and it's a few sensors that attach to the helicopter blades. And it used to be a very complicated and time-consuming process to make sure that the helicopter blades on a Black Hawk are perfectly aligned to one another. And it's especially challenging when you're on an aircraft with the ocean and the movement of the aircraft. So we designed this product called the DAP, where you can attach these sensors to the helicopter blades, and you attach those sensors to a PDA, a handheld computer. And we've written a software program that will help mechanics align the alignment of the angles of those blades to one another. And it helps with their maintenance of the aircraft, as well as the efficiency of mechanics working on it. So, and they can do it on a ship that happens to be on a moving ocean.
On a different note, Al.
Yes.
I've been reading your January newsletter. Is this a monthly newsletter that comes out?
Yes. We try to summarize the activities within the organization on a monthly basis, yes.
Well, I'd like to talk to you perhaps offline, getting your permission to put it on our Manufacturing Talk Radio website and direct people to read it. This way people from all over the country will see what's going on in aerospace in Connecticut. And who knows, maybe you'll get some of that high-powered, talented folks from the West Coast, Southwest, Texas, to take a look at Connecticut as a place that they may want to come join.
Absolutely.
So we could talk about that offline.
Certainly.
Max, I want to go to you for just a moment. Turbine Technologies obviously has to encounter some very interesting challenges in the kind of work it does. Can you share some of the things that Turbine does and some of the challenges it encounters when it's building the parts for turbine engines and jet aircraft?
Sure. Well, we receive parts from other manufacturers in the state and in the country. We receive their parts, and then we have to put very tight tolerance hole slots and other shapes inside of these parts that are very, very difficult to hit. So our engineers in the development process, they actually have to learn the part just as well as the engineer that designed the part. When you're putting holes through the side of a piece of metal into a blind spot, you know, you really, really have to know the geometry of these parts. So it takes a lot of development work. Typically, we like to get in on the ground floor of the development of parts, for instance, any of the newer aircraft, and work with the engineers at the OEMs and the casting houses that are making these parts to ensure that we can get it right and that the geometry inside of these cavities is accurate. We also work with the other suppliers of these parts when they're trying to figure out how to put a special feature into their highly valuable parts. So we work directly with them and develop the job with them very collaboratively. And our proximity in the state gives us great flexibility in being able to get to our customers and all over the state. With that, I'm also the vice president of the ACM. currently. And so we have exposure to a lot of these different companies and friendships and relationships that have grown through the years. So collaboration really works out well.
And Paul, how about HABCO? What are some of the challenges that HABCO experiences when you're developing equipment for the aerospace industry?
Well, we've touched on several of them. I mean, similar to with you guys, I'm one of those gray-haired 57-year-old people that are looking to find the younger talent. In fact, 2 weeks ago, I just went to a leadership development program where we're trying to identify those future leaders and then develop them. And, you know, so there's always, it's tough to find engineers that are trained the right way. We sponsor an internship, as we've spoken about. So for us, one of our big challenges is talent acquisition and retaining talent. So we've increased our benefits packages. We now have a profit sharing plan. We have a pretty aggressive 401k plan. We have an internal training program called HABCO University. We're doing those things to not only identify those future leaders, attract those future leaders, and retain them. And I think that's our biggest challenge is it's not that many people because we're such a small company, but when you grow from 30 employees to 50 and from 50 to 80, it's a big change for us. And so every one of our groups is impacted from not only manufacturing but also sales, also finance and administration, and engineering. And so we're constantly looking at the talent pool and how we can attract and retain the best talent.
Al, I'm sure that the ACM puts on seminars during the course of the year. Do you do anything on maintaining technological excellence?
Actually, we do. Our progressive manufacturing team, which is one of our sub-organizations that meets on a monthly basis, deals with a number of subjects, and that can span anything from traditional Kaizen to quality-related issues to technology. And very often we'll put on what we consider to be half-day seminars, and we'll bring in a series of manufacturers, not so much to do a commercial, even though they are talking about their product, but the important issue is to talk about what technology is available today. When you look at our businesses, and many of these small businesses are so busy in terms of just managing themselves and taking care of the daily work, they really don't have a lot of time to look at what the future is bringing and what's out there today. So we try to bring that to them. So rather than talking about what technology might look like in 20 years, we spend these half-day sessions talking about the available technology that's out there today, the advantages of it, and frequently we do it at a location where they can actually see demonstrations taking place.
And I do want to take the opportunity, since we do allow our guests to shamelessly promote their products on their website, to remind our listeners of the Connecticut Department of Economic and Community Development website, which is DECD, that's David Echo Charlie David.org, if you want to get information particularly about that revenue sharing program. Al, what's your website?
The website is www.aerospacecomponents.org, and aerospace components is one run-on word.
Okay.
And that'll lead you to Aerospace Alley.
Okay. And Max, how about for Turbine Technologies?
Turbine Technologies is www.turbineCT, as for Connecticut, turbineCT.com. And also, if you go to the ACM website, it'll give you direct links to all of the ACM member companies in there, and good source of information.
Okay, and Paul, how about for HABCO?
For HABCO, it's www.habco, that's HABCO.biz.
Okay, so there are the websites for our listeners if anybody wants to tune in. To go online and explore more about the guests we've had on today. I want to thank each of you. Al, I appreciate you coming on the show and sharing lots of information today about ACM. Thank you for being with us.
Well, thank you. I've enjoyed having the opportunity to talk about this terrific industry.
It is an exciting industry, and Max McIntyre from Turbine Technologies. Max, I appreciate you being on the show with us today. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome. I enjoyed it myself.
And Paul Rushlow of HABCO. Paul, you and I had a chance to talk, and I was fascinated by some of these microscopic holes they drill in turbine blades. Never would have thought that a turbine blade could melt in operation. I appreciate you being on the show today. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I've enjoyed it, and also want to thank Al and Max and Catherine as well.
And well, Lou, I want to go to you because you've got a few updates here before we wrap up the show.
Yeah, we'll be wrapping up here in just a few moments. I just wanted to give insight into our next Tuesday's show, the Rob Report from the ISM. Brad Holcomb, who's the senior analyst for ISM, and Ray Perryman, president and CEO of Perryman Group, an economic research and analyst from Waco, Texas. They will be on the show with us for the ISM monthly show. And I do want to mention also that May 3rd, 4th, 5th, Manufacturing Talk Radio is going to be broadcasting live at the ISM 100th Anniversary Conference in Phoenix, Arizona. We're looking forward to doing that. We did that last year. We had a fun time. I think we did about 23 different radio interviews in 3 days, and we came back exhausted. So we're looking forward to doing that again. And next week, again, we will have Rob and Ray Perryman on our show at that time. Tim?
Just want to remind our listeners that Manufacturing Talk Radio is going to be doing a series on the aerospace industry. We'll be talking about aerospace in the Southeast. We'll be looking at the Carolinas, where a lot of aerospace seems to be moving to. We'll take a look at California. We'll take a look at Texas, kind of bounce around the U.S. and see what aerospace is doing.
And for those of you who have not heard the entire show today, in about 90 minutes, it will be podcast on our show, as well as iTunes and YouTube, and you can listen to the whole show at that time. So thank you. Thank you, Tim. And back to you.
Okay, and that kind of wraps us up for today on Manufacturing Talk Radio. If you want to tune in live or you want to find one of our previous shows, you can find them at mfgtalkradio.com. We broadcast each Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. You can also follow us on Twitter. Our handle is at mfgtalkradio. If you'd like to send a question or a comment to either Lou or myself about the show, please send an email to info@mfgtalkradio.com. And we'll be back again with you next week with Manufacturing Talk Radio and the ISM update and an economic update. Until then, the voice of manufacturing globally, Manufacturing Talk Radio, we'll see you next week.
Thanks for joining us on Manufacturing Talk Radio. You can hear our next broadcast each Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at mfgtalkradio.com.